It's the time and get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today is Norman Alajem, I'm going to say. Is that correct, Norman?
It's pretty well correct. I say Alajem, but anything goes.
Oh, Alajem. Norman Alajem. That's way better than Alajem.
Way better.
Way better. I'm sorry. He's the author of From Me to You, Stories of Life, Faith, and How to Negotiate a Bigger Allowance. Here's the thing, Norman. I read a little bit of the book that they sent me. I love this idea. I see it's an idea that comes up. It's a new kind of thing where, or by new, I probably mean within the last, maybe the last couple of years, where one of the suggestions that you get when you're a new dad is to write down your thoughts and feelings, right, as almost a letter to your kid, because chances are you're not going to remember all of it as well as your kid gets older. And it's a cool thing that they could go back and look at when they're old enough to kind of understand, maybe when they have kids of their own, that kind of stuff. But you did it for an entirely different reason, Norman. What was your reason?
Well, my reason was different, though slightly related. My reason was, by the time Mackenzie, my youngest daughter, was born, I was already a little bit of an older dad. And although certainly I hope and plan to live to be 100, nothing is given. And there were a lot of things that I wanted to talk to her about, to say to her about love and marriage and faith and, you know, something of our family lore. But of course, at the time that I started having these thoughts, she was probably 10 or 11. So she didn't have either the capacity or the interest to talk about any of those things with me. I had become the annoying dad. So I thought, what better way to do it? And it was really my wife's idea, but what better way to do it than to just write all those thoughts down? And so I decided that I was going to write her a letter a week for a year with anything and everything that came to my mind. And that's what I did.
And that's the book.
And that's the book. Although funny enough, I did not, you know, a lot of people ask me, when did you set out to become an author? And I say, I really never set out to become an author. I set out to write letters to my daughter. And what happened was, so you know, because as an artist and creator of content yourself, right, staring at the blank page is hard.
Yeah.
So what happened was I wrote the first letter. It was great fun. It happened easily. And I said, oh, this is going to be a breeze. And then a week later, when it was time to write the second letter, I looked at the blank page of the computer and I had no idea what to write, what topic to address, any of that. So really just to hold myself accountable, very literally, I posted the first letter on my Facebook page, and I said, this is the first of 52. I'm going to write one a week for a year. Tune in, really, because I wanted to hold myself accountable and not be embarrassed by not posting them. And so it started going as a blog, and weirdly, it was very widely read. And what happened was, and that was about 5 years ago, and then I just forgot about it. And then about a year or so ago, a friend of mine who happens to be a book publisher friended me randomly on Facebook, and he saw the blog and he read it and he called me up and said, this is fantastic. It could be a book. And that's how it became a book.
And what I think is interesting about that is that the what the listeners may not know is Norman is a guy from the entertainment industry, right? You've been a producer for years. What other kinds of things have you done in entertainment?
Well, I started life as a lawyer. I started as an entertainment lawyer, but I've been a producer and a talent manager for many years. So weirdly enough, I'm now having a very small dosage of what I've seen my clients experience my whole career. I'm usually not the guy on the podcast. You understand?
Yeah,
that, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You're the guy booking the podcast, maybe,
exactly.
Or more likely a radio tour of some kind. Here's the thing. I'm curious about this because it's something that I feel like I see a lot of. A lot of lawyers, especially entertainment lawyers, somehow end up becoming like producers or in some way, I'm going to use the term to use a Hollywood cliche, movers and shakers within the industry, right? What do you think? Do you have any insight as to why that is?
Well, I do. I think that law can be a little bit on the dry and boring side.
What?
And I think that a lot of people who get into the entertainment law world, such as myself, actually have an interest in content and the creative elements of it or whatever, but didn't necessarily have that talent. In other words, you know, you're a comedian, you can make people laugh, you can do all these things. That was not – none of that was my gift. So I decided, well, I have a bit of the gift of gab, whatever, I'll become a lawyer. But when you are a lawyer, even as an entertainment lawyer, you're just pouring through contracts and this and that, the other. I think just people with a bit more of a creative thing want to be a little bit more involved with the creative element of – telling stories. At least that was my experience anyway. I won't speak for everybody.
And what is it fair to say that when you're the lawyer for these people, it's a great opportunity to kind of have they network, like they come to you. And so you end up knowing and learning more about the business and all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, look, I think there's a yes. I think there's a lot of truth to that. But funny enough, it's misleading. You know, I was just telling somebody the other day when I first left the law business to produce a movie that I had co-written. It was sort of my first foray into the creative arena. And it just happened so easily and smoothly and, you know, sort of with one hand tied behind my back. And I just thought, oh my God, this stuff is so easy. But I now liken it to the rookie ball player who wins the Super Bowl in his first year and thinks, oh, I'll be in the Super Bowl every year. It's like, good luck trying to get back.
You're right. You know? Yeah, tell that to Colin Kaepernick.
Yes, exactly right. So that's another thing.
Yeah, right? Oh, with a lawyer background, too. That'd be interesting. Although you'd probably be negotiating the Lifetime movie type thing for him. But
I would be negotiating that, the Nike deal, yes. All of the above.
Yeah. So much stuff to ask you. So I hope this isn't too touchy of a subject, but I'm fascinated by the idea mostly because you don't know this, but my wife's parents were both in their early 40s when she was born. Oh. So literally she has siblings that are the same age as my parents and she was born an aunt. And
that's interesting.
So this is where I'm coming from. And so forgive any insensitivity or ignorance that I have to this, but was there any part of you that honestly thought, I'm going to write these letters down because I want to be able to impart some wisdom on the unlikely or, you know, hope for it. Obviously, like you said, you hope to be around till you're 100. But it's not a bad idea, practically speaking, because chances of you being around when your daughter is in her 40s are not very good. Right. And yet there, as I've learned from my own father, there's still a lot of parenting and advice that can be given. But you can't dispense that kind of advice to a 10 to 20 year old. Right.
How dare you bring this up? No, look, I think you're 100% correct. In fact, I actually talk about this in one of the chapters in the book where I say, as an older dad, you know, Mackenzie was born just before my 45th birthday. And I actually say in the book, I don't hide it, that, you know, since my daughter was born, I sort of think about my life going forward in what I call Mackenzie years. But by that, I mean, if she lives to be, you know, if I live to be, I'm making it up, 65, I'll see her to 20. If I live to be 75, I'll see her to 30. If I live to be 90, she'll be the same age. I'll see her to the same age I was when I wrote the book. I mean, that stuff is crazy. If you have your kids in your 20s, again, life is never a given. Right. But if you have your kids in your 20s, absent an accident of nature or fate, you will be around to watch them graduate high school and college and get married and you'll become a grandparent and all that. As an older parent, you still hope you'll do all that, but you don't know. And so what I was thinking was, number one, I wanted to, you know, buy insurance, if you will. Yeah. And number two, I just wanted her. The one thing I think about in my own family, I don't know, Justin, how it is with you, but I really have very little idea of what my parents thought in the world as protagonists in their own life, as opposed to just supporting players in mine. And I think it would be interesting that at some point, not now, you know, Mackenzie is now 17, but when she's 25, 35, 65, to be, and by then I certainly will be long gone, for her to be able to read that book or, you know, and see what I was thinking and what the world was like and what I thought about her and how I cared about her. One of them, I'll just do a very quick shameless plug, but one of the most fun things was when the book agent sold the book, he also sold the book to Audible. And as part of that deal, I got to read the book myself.
Oh, that's great.
And the notion that 50, 60, you know, to your point, and your wife's having older parents as well, the notion that in 50 or 60 years, she can listen to my voice when I was still reasonably vibrant and think about my life for her, love for her, I mean.
Yeah.
God, that's amazing, right?
It is. And I hope I'm not getting too dark, but I do think it's such an interesting idea.
Yeah, is this the death podcast?
Yeah. This is, well, it is now.
It is now, yeah.
All I needed was the right co-host, Norman. So,
my God, that's hilarious.
Because... I'm going to be honest, is that I did an episode that back in the day, I wasn't thinking of this. I just thought it would be fun to get generational parents together. Yeah. And so my grandfather and my dad and I did an episode of this show. And my grandfather dropped some just amazing knowledge from a guy who barely finished high school, right? Like just,
yes.
He grew up in the Great Depression and was just talking about the foresight that he saw and even had is that this was it. Wow. This is going on probably 5-6 years ago, I think now at this point, maybe longer. It's hard to remember the exact year. But anyway, he was talking about how kids are so inundated with commercialism. And again, he didn't put it in these terms, but basically what he said, when I grew up during the Great Depression, were basically eating corn cobs were my toys that I would pretend that they were horses until somebody needed to wipe their ass with in the outhouse. He said, you don't really have to worry about keeping up with the Joneses. Like I didn't, the next neighbor was miles away. I had no idea what they had or what they didn't have. I was just happy with my life kind of a thing. And I've seen multiple studies about this where they talk about people that grew up in that era, how their bar for happiness was so much lower than the kids have their set for today. And so that they believe that this is what is a part of this, like increase in depression, anxiety, blah, blah, blah. But here's the point. Point is, when my grandfather passed away, my family, and this is probably why I'm hyper worried about offending you, but it does not bother me to talk about this. My family is a very unique perspective on death, that it seems to be, it's a very natural thing in our eyes. We don't really get emotional. I'm not going to lie and say that it was about a year after he passed away, or maybe it was right as he passed away. But I replayed that episode. Like I put it out there because I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And when I listened to it, to say that I didn't well up because I got to hear his voice. So I don't think you're off at all in this idea of having the audio book where you can literally read these letters to her at any point in her life, I think is amazing and phenomenal. And I say all this not only for people to go out and check out the book, because it's such an interesting concept. Get the audiobook if you want something just to entertain you on your drive. And I think just the few chapters that I perused, I really think that especially if you're an expecting parent or a new parent, it's great, because what Norman brings to the table is a guy who's had a lot of life experience, right? But is kind of, not really, but he's new to the parenting world. You had two stepdaughters before your daughter was born. So it wasn't like you were completely fresh. And so what I liked about what I was reading is that this is a guy who's embarking on is what's sort of a new chapter, but it's like you had read many books before in this. You had experience as a father, as a stepfather, and which I don't think is that much different, but you're also imparting all of this information with a different sense of life, a different sense of priorities than, say, someone who is in their mid-20s to early 30s when most people start families, right?
Correct. No, 100%. Look, the one thing that I brought to the table as an older dad in that regard, by definition, was that I had a little bit more life experience. I had a little bit more career success under my belt. I'd seen a few different things that someone who is 25 or 28 or whatever when they have the first kid wouldn't have, just because I haven't lived 40 years. You know what I mean? And so, look, I think it's an interesting perspective. I think also for myself as a dad, as an older dad and all that, you know, in my career representing artists and, you know, I see what somebody like you does who is an artist. That's your version of immortality, for lack of a better word, right? You're leaving your stamp on the world for future generations. That's what you get to do by reason of what you do for a living. That's not, I'm that only adjacent, right? By reason of the people that I represent. This book for me gave me a little bit of, oh, there's my immortality. I've written in the book of life something about me, my family, and all those things. And it's, you know, kind of interesting.
I think you dropped the word kind of. I think you're being modest, and it's understandably so. We are wired to be humble, but I found it very interesting. It's interesting because here's the thing. You look at Norman, right? To be frank, that most of the people listening to this aren't going to know Norman, right? We're not going to know you as a celebrity or anything like that. But what I found enjoyable about what I was reading is that it made it more intimate to me. It's a normal guy talking about being a parent and dispensing some life advice. I mean, telling the story about how you reconnected with her mother. I would be lying if it didn't well up a little bit, because every aspect of what you will read in this book is very relatable, right? We all can relate to it. And I really felt like, as a guy who's knocking on the door of 40 at 39, I really thought that it's like, this is interesting because I'm almost seeing into my own future. So you did a really good job of making what is your personal experience meant to be something like a gift to your daughter for her to have, and then kind of sharing it with everybody. I think by that intent, which you've kind of already hinted at, is that by the intent of this just being for her and then sharing with everybody, there's something about that, and I'm being so heavy-handed, and I'm sorry, and cliche with all of this, but it's true, is that there's something about that intimate intent that I think people find way more interesting than just you trying to, say you were writing all these letters with the intent of everybody reading them. I think it really does change the tone of it, and it changes our connection. I don't know you as a guy who's been, working with and on storytelling for years. I feel like in this internet age, what has come out of it is that people are more interested than ever before in the real people talking about their experiences. Like it becomes a form of friendship. I mean, I've had people who listen to this show that come up to me after a stand-up show, and they said that when they saw me, they didn't want to come and say hi because they felt like a stalker, because they felt they knew so much about my life, and yet I knew nothing about them. And I was like, no, I like talking to people. Like, it's fun. Trust me, if I didn't like to talk, I wouldn't do this, number one. I'm more worried about me talking too much and people losing interest. That's my bullshit anxiety that I carry with me, right?
Let me just say one thing in response to that, which I find fascinating, because these stories, to your point, they're very personal. I didn't write a book where I said, oh, little girls should do this, little boys should do that. I didn't do that. I wrote very specifically about my daughter, my family, our experiences. And yet so many people who have read the book or listened to the Audible book have said to me, my God, those themes are universal. I saw myself in it. I saw my aunt in it. I saw my daughter in it. And funny enough, I've had two different reactions, which have been very fulfilling. One group of people have said to me, oh my gosh, I wish my father or mother had written letters to me. And then the other group are saying, oh my God, I should be writing letters to my son or daughter.
Yeah.
So that's very, again, very fulfilling.
That's what it made me realize is I think I'm going to get like a moleskin, book that I carry, one that I would write notes in for meetings or for ideas for the show, or if I have a joke idea, like I keep one that I always travel with. And I think I'm going to buy one for each of my kids and just almost treat it like a journal and just write little things. So if they have a nothing, because here's the thing. In the beginning, you need a book like Norman's book in your life as a parent, especially a new parent, because the thing about this show that was the unintended consequence is I get so many emails from people who say that the reason that they like this show is because, especially when my kids were younger. Right now, I'm in a sweet spot of parenting. They're 10 and 7.
Boys or girls?
I have two boys.
Got you.
So they, there's a lot of, it's a lot of repetition in the idea of saying, hey, I need you to do this and this. And it's about instilling in them autonomy. That's what I feel like is my role as their father right now, is that I want them to, I don't want to push them away, right? I'm still uber affectionate. But there is an element where I'm showing them that I'm turning up the notch of expectation. That's the best way I could kind of, in a nutshell, describe what I feel like. But when they were babies and infants, it seems so confusing, and you don't know what's going on in any way, shape, or form. You can't communicate with them either. Like today, literally this morning, my son woke up and he had a crook in his neck. And what was great about it was I said, well, you gotta stretch it out. And he goes, but it hurts. And I said, right. I get that it hurts. And the only way to make it not hurt, ironically enough, is to make it hurt. I go, you gotta kind of push through the pain. And it was a nice, honest, it seems stupid, but it was a nice interaction where I just got to have a conversation with him and I got him some Advil. I said, here, take some Advil if you want to lay in bed a little bit longer. But while you're laying here, you got to take big, deep breaths and you got to twist your head to the, put your ear to your shoulder, put your other ear. Like, it's going to feel uncomfortable, but you're not going to break your neck. It's not going to snap. Nothing's going to go wrong. You just got to loosen it up. And the more big, deep breaths you take, the better off you'll be, okay? And he's like, okay. And I go, all right, I got to go make breakfast because mom went to work early this morning, so you're good. And I walked out.
And, that's fantastic.
Right, but I couldn't do that when they're a year old. The reason I'm saying all of this is that, again, I think for somebody when you're in that younger age group, right, and starting out, that this is a good book for you to check out because not only are you going to get a little bit of insight down the road, but it's going to give you a lot of perspective that having a guy with more life experience going through the same kind of emotions and feelings that you're going through and then putting pen to paper. And I think it's going to help you to articulate what you're thinking and feeling, just because I have that happen a lot where somebody else has a similar experience and they describe it. And I'm like, yes, that's how I was feeling. That kind of stuff, I think, is really, and it's going to inspire you, I think, like what Norman said, to start to keep a little bit of a journal of the first, even if you do just the first year. And I think it's a nice goal to say, hey, I'm going to spend 15 minutes once a week just writing a little thing like, this is what I thought this week. And I think it's a nice form of therapy, too, because so much, especially of taking care of little kids, so much feels isolating. It feels because if you're the caretaker, right, if you're the person who ends up being at home, or even if you guys use daycare, right, like, so much of your life as a couple, or if you're already a single parent, becomes about taking care of this kid. Every book spends like a half a page talking about how don't forget each other. But then all of the information, which is what you want, is about taking care of the kid. And it's easy because it's usually the first chapter. It's easy to forget that part about taking care of your relationship or taking care of yourself as well. And I think that spending 15 minutes once a week with a little book that you can eventually give to your kid of writing just two or three sentences or a paragraph, whatever inspires you. Don't make it homework, right? But make it a thing where you could say, hey, this is what I thought. And if one day you're like uber passionate, you got a lot to say, then say it. And even if you're in there going, hey, you know, you really frustrated me today. But it gives you an opportunity to articulate your feelings of frustration in a way that you can't necessarily articulate to your kids, I think. And that it gives you the kind of therapeutic feeling of having that one way conversation, knowing that eventually they will read this and you kind of get it off your chest. Right. But also, it gives you, well, that's it. I think it just gives you the chance to articulate it.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. And to your point, whether you're writing a, you know, 2,000 word thing or just two sentences on any given day, I think it's really important. And I love the point you make, Justin, about being able to articulate your thoughts, even for further down the road. I mean, I'll tell you, you have sons. I have three daughters. But one of my favorite chapters in hindsight is the chapter I wrote called The Birds and the Bees, which is literally about having that conversation with your child.
Yeah.
And especially fathers and daughters, right? It's probably a little bit different with sons, although certainly in my generation, nobody had that conversation with me. You know, my father's 90. If I brought up to him now, he would panic. You know what I mean? So, but the notion when I wrote the chapter on the birds and the bees, and you know, it's an awkward and embarrassing thing for parents to talk about with their children. Certainly for fathers to talk about with their daughters. And what I tried, and I hopefully did, capturing that book was with some humor and some heart and some good advice, what all that's about. But one of the things for me, and especially in the crazy world we live in today, is that my daughters never feel like second-class citizens, even in the world of sex and dating, that they never feel like they shouldn't enjoy it, you know, all those things. But the notion, funny enough, because I wrote that chapter or that letter at the time when she was probably 10 or 11, and then maybe about a year and a half ago, she was 15 or something, and she and my wife and I were out to dinner, and I don't know what she said that just got us into that conversation, and I had everything I wanted to say I had already thought through, and it ended up weirdly being the most unembarrassing and least awkward conversation ever.
Unfortunately, I have to be a jerk and cut us off there because that concludes the free portion of this episode. If you would like to listen to the rest of this episode and all of the other full episodes of The Dad Podcast, all you have to do is go to thedadpodcast.com. That's thedadpodcast.com. Include that the. Thedadpodcast.com. Right there on the homepage, there are links where you can become a paid premium subscriber and get all of the shows full length moving forward. If you have any issues with that, send me an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for your support.